Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, June 9th, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Oregon freezes in-state tuition in exchange for limits on local GMO rules. Nez Perce Tribe challenges draft Bonneville Power Administration wildlife rules for fish habitat. Moscow Committee endorses extension of agreement with Southeast Moscow Water and Sewer District. Republicans vie for statewide party chairmanship in Idaho, and student used pepper spray to subdue killer on Seattle campus. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Idaho State Police identified the man killed by Coeur d'Alene police Friday night as 28-year-old Thomas White of Coeur d'Alene. White died in the backyard of one of his neighbor's homes after someone called police during a loud domestic argument in the 400 block of East Dragonfly Drive. Police say they were told White was armed. A Coeur d'Alene police press release said, shots were fired and White was fatally wounded. So far, neither the ISP, which is leading the investigation into the shooting, nor the Coeur d'Alene police have said whether White was armed or whether he fired any shots. Police have not released the names of the three Coeur d'Alene police involved in the killing. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service today set 2018 as the date they will finish writing their lynx recovery plan. Lynx are classified as threatened under a 2000 Endangered Species Act designation. Several environmental groups sued as the Fish and Wildlife Service took years to come up with a recovery plan for lynx. The groups who sued last year were Friends of the Wild Swan, Rocky Mountain Wild, Biodiversity Conservation Alliance, and the San Juan Citizens Alliance. An attorney for the groups, Matthew Bishop, told the Associated Press, asking for nearly four additional years to complete a long overdue recovery plan without any interim deadlines for completing a draft plan or updates to ensure progress is being made seems unreasonable to me. The Nez Perce Tribe is challenging the draft of revised rules for fish and wildlife recovery projects funded by the Bonneville Power Administration. The Northwest Power and Conservation Council revises the rules every 5 years, and the current draft is open for public comment through July 9th. Strict adherence to the proposed rules would bring sharp cuts in Nez Perce tribal hatchery production. One stipulation in the rules calls for two-thirds of salmon spawning grounds to be for wild rather than hatchery fish. Another stipulation calls for barriers to separate hatchery fish from wild spawning reaches. To do so could require Nez Perce hatcheries reduce their production by 98%. Nez Perce Tribal Fisheries Director David Johnson told the Lewiston Tribune the rules are too prescriptive and fail to take into account longstanding agreements, laws, and court orders to mitigate the reduction in wild salmon runs caused by dams. Johnson said hatcheries provide fish as a traditional food for tribal members as well as for non-tribal anglers. He said dams are causing the reduction in wild salmon, not hatcheries. Northwest Power and Conservation Council Fish and Wildlife Division Director Tony Grover defended the plan and sought to smooth over the potential conflict with the tribe. Grover agreed ratios of wild and hatchery Chinook called for in the plan couldn't be achieved without dam removal. Grover told the Lewiston Tribune the rules are intended as guidelines and cannot represent every situation, and he called on agencies that have alternative recovery plans to put them forward. He acknowledged under current conditions hatcheries will be needed for at least the next 100 years. Johnson, however, said the tribe will be asking the council to rewrite the hatchery portion of the rules to make it clear how flexible the guidelines are intended to be. Nez Perce hatcheries produce about 5.5 million juvenile fall Chinook each year. As Idaho Republicans prepare to gather for their annual convention after a divisive primary election, the election of the chair of the state party will reflect how deep the rifts in the party are. The three people considered frontrunners are current chair Barry Peterson and two challengers, sheep breeder Mike Duff of Blackfoot and Premier Technology President Doug Sayer. Delegates will choose the statewide chair at the state convention in Moscow, which starts Thursday. State Senator Russ Fulcher, who lost a primary bid to unseat incumbent Governor C.L. Butch Otter last month, is endorsing Peterson. Duff, however, told the Associated Press, electing the incumbent chair will only guarantee more of the same. He said you can't unify the party with a chairman who is divisive. Duff said he has experienced uniting the party because he helped heal a rift in the 1990s. Sayer, who is considered a traditional establishment Republican, said he wants to move on from the party's differences and focus the discussion on electing all the party's candidates in November. Police and fellow students credit Seattle Pacific University senior John Meese with preventing further bloodshed when he used pepper spray to subdue a gunman who opened fire on the campus in the Queen Anne neighborhood of Seattle Thursday afternoon. One student was killed in the incident and two others were injured. After Meese unloaded pepper spray in Otto Miller Hall, he and other students jumped on the gunman, disarmed him, and held him down until police arrived. Meese was working as a student security monitor at the classroom building's reception desk when the gunfire occurred. Seattle Mayor Ed Murray identified the dead student as 19-year-old Paul Lee, a freshman. The alleged shooter is 26-year-old Aaron R. Ibarra of suburban Mount Lake Terrace. Ibarra, who was not a student at Seattle Pacific University, was charged with first-degree murder Friday. A judge ordered him held without bail. The two injured were identified as Sarah Williams, who was upgraded from serious to stable condition last night, and 24-year-old Thomas Fowler, who was released from the hospital Friday. Ibarra had been involuntarily committed to a mental health facility twice in recent years. A Mount Lake Terrace police incident report says the first time Ibarra was committed was after he called 911 in October 2010 and told the dispatcher he wanted to hurt himself and others because he had rage inside him. Prayer services were held at the Christian College Friday and over the weekend. An online fundraising campaign for Paul Lee's funeral expenses and Sarah Williams' medical care raised nearly $13,000 over the weekend, and another fundraising campaign for the upcoming wedding of the student who pepper sprayed the assailant had raised $44,000. Police took two escaped inmates from the North Idaho Correctional Institute in Cottonwood into custody Saturday night south of Clarkston. Inmates Tyler D. Davis and Dylan J. Ames, both 23 years old, escaped while unloading a truck Wednesday and apparently hitched a ride with a boater from the Idaho side of the Snake River to the Washington side. They were captured along the bike path between Clarkston and Assotin after a driver who had given them a ride towards Clarkston became suspicious and called police. The Assotin County Sheriff's Department reported two officers took Davis and Ames into custody without incident. The Oregon State Board of Higher Education Friday froze in-state undergraduate tuition at state colleges and universities for the next school year. Tuition has been steadily rising at Oregon public colleges. Average tuition was $4,000 per year in 2001, but this past school year it averaged $8,000. The freeze comes from this past fall's grand bargain between Governor John Kitzhaber and legislative leaders in which Kitzhaber got more money for higher education in exchange for government employee pension cuts and support for a law prohibiting most counties in the state from regulating genetically modified crops. The Moscow City Council Public Works Committee today approved an extension of the city's agreement with the Southeast Moscow Water and Sewer District, which is located just outside of city limits in rural Moscow along the Troy Highway. The agreement, which has been in place since 1991, was set to expire July 1st. If approved by the City Council, the extension would be short-term, going until December 1st. The short extension would give city staff and the Water and Sewer District Board time to negotiate some changes in the agreement. City Supervisor Gary Riedner and Public Works Director Les McDonald explained at today's Public Works Committee meeting.
This agreement was first entered into in June of 1991. Thank you. And has been extended in a couple of instances in order for us to modernize the agreement. There was a time about, I want to say it was 3 to 4 years ago, perhaps a little longer, when the district was considering just disbandment. They wanted to dissolve and wanted the city to take over the aspects of the district ownership of the sewer pipes, the infrastructure, that sort of thing. That was discussed, and at that point, staff did some research, brought it to council. Council decided that that was not the way that they wanted to go. Staff's recommendation was until the area is annexed, that providing municipal services out there without providing them to a district, which is ultimately responsible for the provision of the services, was probably the way that we should continue to go. Council agreed with that. The district then became somewhat revitalized. Kathleen Warnick was the president of the district at the time. She since withdrew, and Lois Pritchett is now the president, chair of the district, whatever that position is called. And we've had a good relationship with them since. They've become more active. They hold their elections. They do what is necessary to remain in conformance with Idaho law and be a government. So the latest extension took us through, or takes us through, July 1st, and that extension was to allow us to modernize the agreement, and that had to do with hookup fees. Les, you could pick it up from there. What were the specifics to be addressed by that new agreement?
Yeah, there were a number of things. Certainly just bringing some of the language to today's approach, if you will. There were a lot of fees, either both connection and service fees, that were based on the rates from 1981, so things like that had to be updated. There were a couple of attachments that needed to be updated. One was with the highway district on an agreement that had since expired. The district has now formalized as well. And then some additions to address some of the issues that are more current. One of those, first and foremost, really being the issue of flow coming from outside the district boundaries that might need to pass through the district. And so in the new draft agreement, there's an entire new section that talks about that and how that would be addressed. The idea there, of course, is that as the city is expanding to the east and southeast, we're getting over into that Palouse Basin, Palouse River drainage basin, a portion of which is going to be upstream of district facilities, you know, gravity-wise. And so it makes a lot of sense to be able to gravity flow through their system and back into the city system on downstream. So that was probably the major change that's in that draft contract now.
That was Moscow Public Works Director Les McDonald, preceded by City Supervisor Gary Riedner, speaking at this afternoon's Moscow City Council Public Works Finance Committee meeting. McDonald said, if that portion of rural Moscow is annexed into the city, new development would have to meet fire flow requirements and other zoning rules. Riedner and McDonald spoke about what would change if the area covered by the Southeast Moscow Water and Sewer District were to be annexed into the city.
Well, I think the issue always with annexation is people want to be annexed because they want to have city services, but if they already have city services, then they don't want to be annexed because then they get taxed.
Right.
And so it just depends what your purpose is. If you have a development that you can get city services to at a reasonable cost, that's the price you pay. There is a there is an apartment complex out there that is that on private well, a private well?
I believe so.
And it's provided service through the Southeast Moscow Sewer District. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are the types of things that level of development would have to be looked at very cautiously.
And the change in service that would occur would be in the area of law enforcement, fire protection, and roads, because we'd go from the rural districts to city services in that case.
That was Moscow Public Works Director Les McDonald, preceded by Moscow City Supervisor Gary Riedner at today's Public Works Committee meeting. The committee put the item on the consent agenda for the next Moscow City Council meeting. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. The vacant lot at the corner of 6th and Jackson Streets in Moscow has changed hands, and construction on a building that will house a Jimmy John's Gourmet Sandwiches franchise is slated to begin next month. Keith Edwards of the Spokane-based Hawkins Edwards Incorporated told the Daily News Jimmy John's will occupy the Jackson Street side of the building, and space will be available for lease in the part of the building fronting 6th Street. Parking will be available to the west of the building. Hawkins Edwards Incorporated has helped develop and lease other properties in the northwest, including Jimmy John's, Napa Auto Parts Stores, and Walmart. State revenue figures released Friday indicate Idaho is within 1% of projected revenues, while the Washington economy continues to be just ahead of the national average. Idaho's sales income and other taxes for the first 11 months of the fiscal year totaled $2.52 billion, or $1.2 million less than projected. Assuming economic activity in June remains the same, Idaho state revenues will rise by 2.1% over the past year. Idaho chief economist Derek Santos is projecting a 6.3% revenue increase for the next fiscal year. That level of increase will provide enough revenue to meet the estimated $2.9 billion projected for 2015 legislative appropriations. Washington Economic and Revenue Forecast Council Executive Director Steve Lurch said Washington revenue collections are up 1.9%. Lurch said Washington's economy continues to grow, with only the aerospace industry and government not showing growth. A Pullman apartment fire that caused about $1,000 worth of damage to a building at 925 Northeast Monroe Street was caused by a cigarette butt tossed out of a second-floor window, which landed on a mattress on the ground below. Firefighters were called and extinguished the fire at about 11 p.m. Friday night. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, it will be mostly clear tonight with a low of 43, mostly sunny tomorrow, 71, partly cloudy, low 42 Tuesday night, and sunny, high 75 on Wednesday, mostly clear, low 45 Wednesday night, and a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms Thursday afternoon, otherwise partly sunny Thursday, high 73. Currently at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport, fair sky, 75 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear on Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial. Eat the Airwaves is coming up next. News and opinions from the West Side, followed by Flashpoints at 6:30. Helen Yost is in with Wild with Climate Justice Forum at 7:30 p.m.